Ready for the third matter on our calendar today. It's our last oral argument. Council, take whatever time you need to settle into council table. I will talk briefly just to move matters forward. First, I'll ask the marshal to call the third case.
Third case today is number 823-1656, Unraised City of St. Paul's decision on the need for an environmental impact statement for the proposed University of St. Thomas multipurpose arena.
All right, and Council, you can certainly make yourselves comfortable and sit down. I understand, based on correspondence, that the respondents have already reached a decision on how to divide argument time. Is that right?
Right,
and I think the marshal is aware of that, and so you should see the appropriate adjustments made on the timing device at the podium. All right, and as regards to the appellant, we have no division. Is that correct? At least I am aware of none. Okay. All right, and then just to make a few other quick remarks, you probably know all of this, but first of all, when you get to the podium, please adjust it in whatever way makes it comfortable for you, the microphone as well as the height. Note that there is a timing device on the podium, and that will tell you how much time you have remaining in your argument. And so that's very helpful to us if you keep an eye on it, as the conversation tends to go quickly. Now, before you start your remarks, we ask you to help keep our record clean and clear, and so identify yourself as well as the client you represent, even though all of that is very clear to us, but we appreciate having that on the audio record. Our audio recording of this argument is later made available on the court's website. So with that, I want to welcome you again to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Counsel for Appellant, we're ready to hear from you when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is James Kovacs, and I represent RELATOR, the Association for Responsible Development. This appeal challenges the City of St. Paul's decision not to require an environmental impact statement for the University of St. Thomas's proposed multipurpose sports arena. The City's environmental awareness worksheet is insufficient for three independent reasons. First, the EAW is legally deficient because it doesn't properly consider phased actions as required by the rules. Second, the City's decision was arbitrary and capricious and not supported by substantial evidence because the record establishes the potential, if not likelihood, for potential or for significant environmental effects. And third, the proposed mitigation that's contained in the EAW is insufficient because there's no evidence in the record to suggest that any of those measures will be effective at mitigating the environmental effects. And I want to start by saying, Your Honors, that this is a very large project. It's a huge sports arena, and the record establishes that it's likely to significantly impact the surrounding neighborhood. As such, it deserves and indeed requires proper environmental review, and that did not occur in this case, and that's why we're here. I first want to start talking about phased actions, and I want to start by noting that this court can review the EAW for legal errors, and whether or not the university's overall redevelopment of its South Campus, including construction of the Schoenecker Center, whether or not that is a phased action is a legal question.
Is the Schoenecker Center done and open and running for business?
I know that it's open and people are there. I don't know if it's fully completed yet.
Okay, so my understanding when I look at the maps, just to help orient me, and maybe this is a better question
for counsel for the university,
but it's Schoenecker, right? Did I pronounce that correctly? I hope so.
Schoenecker.
I may still call it Schoenecker.
It is across a green space from the proposed site for the redevelopment of the athletic complex. Is that right?
I don't know the exact distance. There may be the space that's been referred to as the quad, the South Quadrangle. There, at one point, was the Grand Avenue extension. But for all intents and purposes, they are in the same area.
So that makes me wonder why we're I don't understand the genesis of the argument that these are connected or they're the same or part of a phased action. It seems like they're two different purposes and they're in two different geographic spaces, and the athletic complex is designed for a specific specific thing. And it's not it's not necessarily classroom space. I mean, that's why I'm having a difficult time with this particular argument.
Sure, Your Honor. So there's two sort of categories there. There's connected actions and there's phased actions.
I understand.
Okay, and we're not talking about connected actions. I'm focusing on phased actions. And if you look at Minnesota Rule 4410.0200, Subdivision 60, that defines phased actions. And it says that phased actions are projects undertaken that will have environmental effects in the same geographic area and are substantially certain to be undertaken sequentially over a limited period of time. Those are the requirements. And I submit to this court that based on those two requirements, Schoenecker Center constitutes a phased action. And I would also point out that I don't think there's really a dispute about that in the record. If you look at the city's response to public comments, they conceded that the Schoenecker Center could be considered a phased action. So, and if you look at the briefing, the city did not respond to our argument about phased actions, and the university, although they had some discussion about it, never explicitly argued that it is not a phased action.
So my question is, does that make a difference? Because what is your response to the city and St. Thomas's argument that the impact of the Schoenecker, I hope I'm saying that correctly, good, I got a thumbs up, was taken into account in the EAW process. And so if it was taken into account as baseline, now granted it wasn't open yet, but the experts can extrapolate what the impact's going to be. I mean, that's not rocket science. So what difference does it make? Let's assume you're right, and this should have been treated as a phased action.
Yes, Your Honor. So I would point you to Minnesota Rule 4410.1700, subpart 9.
Wait, give me a second here.
Yep. 4410.1700.
0.1700, okay.
Yep, subpart 9. And it contains the following requirement. Phased actions shall be considered a single project for purposes of determining the need for an EIS. So it's not enough to say, look, the city said, we permitted this building, mm-hmm. okay? And that accounts for all of the stuff that's going to happen in the future.
So are there any triggers that your client is saying, geez, if these had been considered together, that would have triggered whatever that puts us into EIS territory or substantial impact? I mean, that's what I'm asking.
Here's why it matters. As it stands, let's focus on the greenhouse gas emissions for a second. As it stands, the EAW says the proposed arena in isolation is going to more than triple the greenhouse gas emissions for this particular site. There is no analysis as to what effect the Schoenecker Center is going to have on greenhouse gas emissions. We don't know. It wasn't analyzed. And so when you look at...
But they're saying that there's this baseline, which would include the Schoenecker Center, in terms of saying whether this additional new building triggers, reaches the threshold where we need an EIS. So I'm struggling here with that. So if you can help me understand that.
Yes. Ultimately, the decision on whether or not an EIS is needed is when you look at the evidence as a whole, right. Is there the potential for significant environmental effects? And if you only look at part of the project, because, again, the rule says you have to consider the Schoenecker Center as a part of one project if you're considering it a phased action.
Well, but what trigger then would say this is now a substantial impact? What did they bump up against? Where it's like, geez, this would have made a difference, and the conclusion would have been, yes, we need to do an EIS.
The answer, Your Honor, is we don't know because the analysis wasn't done. For example, at what threshold would the greenhouse gases be too much that the city says we should study this further? We don't know. Clearly, it's higher than...
The Schoenecker. Maybe we should ask that of St. Thomas, I guess. Okay, continue on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, as far as I know, Your Honor, and as far as the record is concerned, there is no analysis as to what the continued effect of operating the Schoenecker Center will be, and especially when it's considered in conjunction with the sports arena.
Okay.
So, counsel, does the record in this case before the city include any information about, so the, you've mentioned greenhouse gases in the Shenaker Center, but what about parking in the Shenaker Center?
There is no evidence as to what parking demand the Shenaker Center will create. And that was one thing we talked about extensively.
And Council, I guess what I'm struggling with is a similar question to what Judge Siegel asked. So if there's no evidence that the Shenaker Center, it's part of the baseline, it was a project ongoing at the time, there were estimates about the impact. If it was part of the baseline for the EAW, then there should be something for the city to consider in order to deem for that the inclusion of Shenaker Center as a phased action to have an effect on the city's analysis. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like
you're
coming in, so, and it's been raised in the briefing. I mean, you're coming in with arguments and issues that might have been interesting to the city at the time, but to do that in front of our court, it doesn't make sense. That's not within our standard of review.
So here's what I would say to that, Your Honor. I'm not coming before you to say, look, had the Shenaker Center been considered a phased action and analyzed as a single project, that we would have met some threshold where an EIS would have been ordered. What I'm saying is we don't know if that would have happened because that analysis was not done. And it's not a discretionary decision. Again, from the rule I read, Your Honor, it says phased actions shall be considered a single project. The university or the city does not get to choose whether or not they analyze the effects of the Shenaker Center. They have to. And that is a state law requirement that the city cannot choose not to follow.
I mean, the way I'm reading subpart 60 is that it's not saying that something is definitely a phased action. It may be considered a phased action. And I think that your colleagues acknowledge that these two projects could be considered a phased action, but perhaps they didn't consider it to be a phased action. And I'm wondering what our review is in that situation.
Well, Your Honor,
we're not mandated to conclude something as a phased action by this rule.
Well, I think that based on the evidence in the record and what we know about these two projects, that you can conclude as a matter of law they're phased actions. But regarding the review of a decision,
it would be a tall order given the way that the rule is written. I mean, we're constrained by the way the rule is written. How do we do that?
So the part of the rule you're referring to is that the city may require, may consider it a phased action. Here, the only reference to phased action was in response to a public comment. The public comment said, hey, this is a phased action. You have to look at this. And the city, the only thing they said is, yeah, you're right. This could be a phased action. But we're not going to consider it one. That's the only analysis you have to go off of.
And why don't we give deference to that determination?
Well,
you could consider it that way, but we're not doing that.
First of all, I don't think they said we're not considering it a phased action. They acknowledged it could be a phased action and then said, but we're not going to treat it as such. And so I don't think it's fair to say that we can defer to their determination that it's not a phased action because they made no such determination. The only evidence in the record is that they agreed it is a phased action, and then they failed to analyze the Shenaker Center as a part of this project, which is a clear violation of the rules.
So, Council, I just want to be mindful of the fact that your time is going quickly, and I want to make sure that you address this question. So if we disagree with you on the phased action, for whatever reason,
yep,
perhaps because we defer to the city's determination, do you lose? Or is the negative EIS determination otherwise faulty?
It's otherwise faulty for a couple of reasons, and this is laid out in the briefing. The first is that the decision was arbitrary, capricious, and it's not supported by substantial evidence. One of the main issues here, Your Honor, is the transportation study. And the study itself identifies a parking shortage of 742 spaces for certain men's basketball games.
Maybe two. Men's basketball game.
Well,
I think that's what it says in this transportation study.
That's what the transportation study says, Your Honor. But then 2 weeks after the EAW is finalized, a spokesman from the university says that they actually believe it's going to be 35 near-capacity events. And that is a publicly...
Council, you know, I've got to stop you with regard to any references to public statements by UST. I mean, those are not part of the administrative record in this case. You've cited a case from this court to suggest that we would look at it. I don't see any basis for that in our case law. So if that's the route you want to take on this argument, it tells us something, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't mean to cite to that for the proposition that it's not two, it's 35. The reason why we cite to that is to show that the analysis in the study is not conclusive and it's not sufficient. There is other information that should have been considered. That is the point. And the same is with the average vehicle occupancy. There's been some discussion and evidence outside the record as to what a proper AVO should be. And to your point, Your Honor, I'm not coming before you to say this is what it should have said. Okay, they have discretion to determine what is appropriate. I'm not saying the AVO should have been X. What we're saying is the evidence in the record and the study itself doesn't supply a sufficient basis to come up with the AVO. And that's just one example. And my time is running low. I want to move to the mitigation. So setting aside what we were just previously talking about, you have the phased actions, you have the arbitrary and capricious action. We come to the issue of mitigation. Okay, the parking study has identified an issue with parking. There's a 742 spot shortage. What is the university going to do about it? They have identified a few things: monitoring event attendance at some point in the future, developing a traffic management plan, informing the community of upcoming events, things of that nature.
Why is it inadequate that the city says before we issue a certificate of occupancy, we are going to require measures? I mean, they can put up no parking signs whenever it throughout the neighborhood, when you know, except for residents. So, you know, when there are max capacity events. I mean, why is that not adequate? Because it is in other circumstances. Well, they still have to get, you know, permits for this from the DNR, so it'll be dealt with in that as part of that process. Why is that not adequate?
Mitigation can be adequate in certain circumstances, and in order for it to be adequate, it has to be specific and certain to be effective. I direct you to, again, it's the same rule 4410.1700. This is subpart 7. The RGU may rely only on mitigation measures that are specific and that can be reasonably expected to effectively mitigate the identified environmental impacts. So what about the mitigation that I just read to you and that's contained in the EAW is going to reduce the parking deficit? There's absolutely no evidence in the record that anything they've suggested doing will reduce the parking deficit.
And is that enough in and of itself to trigger the need for an EIS? And is there what would you have us look at to make that decision?
I see my time is up. May I answer this question?
Please.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think that in and of itself may not be enough to trigger an EIS. But what it demonstrates is that the city did not take a hard look at the problems and come to a reasoned decision. Part of the standard of review, the case law says, and I want to find this for the court, is that the appellate court's role in reviewing agency action is to determine whether the agency has taken a, quote, hard look at the problem involved and whether it has genuinely engaged in reasoned decision making. If the city is okay allowing a 742 parking space deficit to go forward without any further analysis, that is evidence of arbitrary action. Thank you.
So, Council, I'll just, if you indulge me for a moment,
yes,
for your purposes of your rebuttal, if you would address, since you'd like to get to mitigation, the fact that the city has found that the mitigation efforts that the UST could take with regard to off-site parking, shuttles, and incentives for public transportation would directly address the parking deficit, all right? And
okay.
And so it seems to me there is something in the record that you're overlooking, and it would help me to hear your explanation for that.
On rebuttal.
On rebuttal.
Yes,
exactly.
Thank you,
thank
Your
Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Daniel Staley, Assistant St. Paul City Attorney, here for the RGU. The RGU conducted an EAW in this case. An EAW is defined as a brief document to identify the basis facts to determine whether a further EIS is necessary.
So, Council, if you don't mind, and I apologize for interrupting you so quickly, but our time is going to go fast, and just in light of the discussion we've already had with Appellants Council, if you turn to the mitigation efforts and explain something to me, because I think I might not be understanding your argument, so that's why I ask it. The city's findings include that the mitigation efforts will be successful. successful, and that they will be tied to the issuance of the certificate of occupancy. And so how does that happen? How does it work? How does it get tied to the issuance, these particular mitigation
Sure. So in addition to the 19 permits that are required by the City of St. Paul, I think there are dozens of other permits required by state agencies, local agencies, and the site plan review, and I think those are incorporated in those permits, which are...
Yeah, but we're not here today talking about those other permits, right? Because those other permits don't, as far as I can tell, they have little to do, if anything, with the parking and the greenhouse gas emissions that appellant is talking about. They do relate to some greenhouse gas emissions, but not the ones that they're talking about related to traffic and parking.
Sure. So, right. Do you want me to talk about greenhouse gases?
No, I want you to talk about the certificate of occupancy, just because, as I said, I don't think I understand your argument, and so perhaps it would help me if
sure.
you explain
so,
it.
I mean, the mitigation that was recommended in the findings of fact by the ARGU.
If I might interject here for a minute, what are the requirements that are to be met, setting aside this project, I'm just talking in general, for a certificate of occupancy to be issued? I mean, once you get all the inspectors and regulatory services, this building is finished, it's safe, it meets fire code, it meets, but is it an automatic process then, or is there discretion saying, wait a minute, we're going to talk about parking? It's like, where is that in the city's ordinances or the state building code?
Sure, I think that comes in with the site plan review that is approved kind of before the certificates of occupancy can be issued. It has to be approved by the city inspector, by the Department of Safety and Inspections.
So does parking and traffic management, is that something that the city has the authority to consider before issuing a certificate of occupancy? Is that the question you were asking, Judge Baffold?
That's
I think
much
so,
better
yeah.
better way of saying it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, that's the mitigation that we recommended and was agreed to. The University of St. Thomas agreed to those terms that were recommended in our findings of fact.
But counsel, the certificate of occupancy has to be issued before any event is held at the site. So how would we even know if the mitigation efforts were successful or would address the concerns that we're talking about today?
Sure.
I mean, it seems like you're putting the horse before the cart, right? You're saying, oh, these mitigation efforts are successful, but we won't know that. That'll be dependent upon the certificate of occupancy.
Well, there are terms that we set forth as being, you know, that were recommended and that they're going to be part of the permitting process, and there's steps that are going to be the University of St. Thomas agreed to perform. If they're not,
I don't think they agreed to perform them. They're recommended, though, right?
In consultation with like the site plan review and the permitting process, St. Thomas agreed to abide by all of the recommendations that were set forth in the EAW findings of fact.
Where's that in the record? I didn't see that, so it would be helpful to me if you told me where that was in the record.
I think that was subsequent. That's kind of ongoing right now. The permitting process is ongoing right now.
So that's not part of our record?
It's not part of the record.
Okay. But you're telling us that the certificate of occupancy is contingent upon St. Thomas actually completing all are agreeing to abide by every one of the recommendations that's in the transportation study?
Yeah, the city doesn't have to issue that until they're satisfied that with any concerns that they have. And we can withhold that based on agreements that were made by St. Thomas.
What about the recommendations in the transportation study that are soft? Like, oh, we could agree with some rideshare programs, or we might issue bus passes, or we could transfer some people over who park normally on the St. Paul campus to the Minneapolis campus. Are those going to be required as well?
They're required to provide incentives to people that do rideshares, that take transit. There's supposed to be incentives for that. And they are working with the City of St. Paul Police Department. That's one of the issues. They have to put forth a traffic management plan and consult with, in consultation with the St. Paul Police Department. So I guess, yeah, moving on to my argument, I think one of the big issues is the standard of review here. Again, I think the court is correct that they have to determine whether or not the decision by the city was arbitrary and capricious. The relator has the burden of proof to make those findings to say that our findings were not supported by the evidence, and we enjoy the presumption of correctness. There are cases where an EIS is required, specifically when it comes to arenas. Under EQB rules, arenas over 30,000 capacity are required to have an EIS, so the agency responsible for making the environmental rules determined that that was the threshold for when an EIS is required. In this case, this is much smaller than that. So the RGU has discretion to determine whether or not one should be completed, and it came to the conclusion that one is not necessary in this case based on the findings based on the mitigation that was put forth in the recommendations. I see my time is up here. So we'd ask that the court affirm the RGU's determinations.
Thank you, counsel.
To lower this, you're not going to be able to see me at all.
Yeah, thank you for doing that.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Betsy Schmiesing, and I'm representing the University of St. Thomas, the project proponent today. The court should affirm the City of St. Paul's decision to issue a negative declaration on the EAW and not require preparation of an EIS in connection with the university's proposed Lee and Penny Anderson Arena. The court seems to have a very good grasp on the standard of review. You are required to defer to the findings of the RGU, or the Responsible Government Unit, here the city. There is one issue where ARD alleges an error of law, and that is with respect to phased actions.
So, counsel, if you don't mind, I'd like to just continue a bit on the mitigation measures, and then you can certainly go back to phased actions if you'd like to. But to follow up on our discussion with the city's attorney with regard to the certificate of occupancy and the mitigation measures, it seemed to me in reading through them, and of course the city finds that the mitigation measures are going to address this parking deficit. And I'm just trying to understand where the evidence is in the record to support that. It seemed to me in reading through them that the two measures that specifically address the parking deficit, because some of them are very general in the mitigation efforts, so things like monitoring event attendance or community engagement, all of which, of course, are valuable, but I don't quite see how that specifically addresses the parking deficit. But there are two. So we've got off-site parking shuttles. We've got incentives for public transportation. All of those could directly affect the parking deficit. But where is the evidence in the record indicating, you know, what sort of success it would have with the parking deficit?
Well, I think, you know, there was an extensive transportation study done to support the EAW.
I have read it, right? Yeah, counsel, thank you.
The folks that put together the transportation study have expertise in those areas. The city, as RGU, deals with traffic and parking and kind of street management issues all the time. That's within its understanding. And the city staff that prepared the EAW and reviewed the EAW and developed the findings of fact reviewed all of that information, and using their knowledge, they determined, okay, here are some issues that have been identified. We understand that there's going to be additional permitting for this project after
this. You know, the council, does the permitting have anything to do with parking? I mean, maybe I'm missing something here. The permits that I saw referenced in the EAW weren't related, at least not that I noticed.
The permitting isn't directly related to parking, but it isn't. But the city, as I understand it, has pretty broad discretion in permitting a site plan, developing a site plan and things of that nature, to include other conditions as to operation of the project. And I want to point the court's attention to the rule that actually addresses mitigation in the context of deciding whether or not an EIS is required. And that is Minnesota Rule 4410.1700, Subpart 7C. Subpart 7 is the section that provides the criteria that the RGU has to consider when it is deciding whether or not there's the potential for significant environmental effects. And that regulation, Part 7C, Subpart 7C, explicitly requires the RGU to consider the extent to which environmental effects are subject to mitigation by ongoing public regulatory authority in determining whether to order an EIS.
But it also provides, and I have it right here, that the RGU may only rely on mitigation measures that are specific and that can be reasonably expected to effectively mitigate the identified environmental impacts. And I think that goes to Judge Bradfield's question.
Sure.
Where is it in this very large EAW and transportation study, that last piece, that the mitigation efforts, the specific mitigation efforts that can, that are directly tied to effectively mitigating the environmental impacts?
Well, I think as the court has recognized, it is in the findings of fact, and the court needs to defer to that findings of fact. And I would say that the general the knowledge of the city and the understanding of the particular types of parking and traffic issues that might occur, I think the city has the ability to come up with mitigation measures. And there are some suggested in the EAW and in the findings of fact. There isn't a requirement that these mitigation measures be certain to work, because you can't know that at the time you're doing the EAW.
And Councilman, I don't want to imply, and I don't think Judge Frisch does either, that we're suggesting that, you know, you would know everything right before an actual project is built. I guess what strikes me, though, about the way, and, you know, it's just a very short page, right, on the city's findings. It just simply says things such as use of public transportation or rideshare, incentives for use. I mean, what kind of incentives, how many incentives have they used them in? I mean, we have no information about that. Similarly, off-site parking, there's no mention, at least not that I saw, but maybe I missed it, right? It's a big record. Where is that off-site parking and how many spaces and how will where is that data, Council? Is it there and we just missed it?
Well, Your Honor, this is a little bit challenging because the EAW itself and the findings of fact don't permit or allow anything. The regulatory authority under which the project is going to be constructed and operated is going to be in these later approvals. The city and NOAA and any other authority with regulatory approval can't do anything until the environmental review process is completed.
No, but St. Thomas can. They can say, we're going to have this many shuttle buses, and we're going to arrange with this parking garage in downtown St. Paul to park everybody there and shuttle them to campus. I mean, none of those specifics are in here from which a fact finder could conclude, a fact finder at the RGU or us on review, look at it and say, yeah, that's an effective mitigation strategy.
You know, there are discussions between the university and the city throughout any large project like this. I understand that not all of it is baked into this record, but, you know, the particulars are going to be developed as the permits are developed and worked on with the city. Again, I return to the language of the rule that really focuses on the extent to which the environmental effects are subject to mitigation by ongoing public regulatory authority.
That brings me to ask you the question I posed to the city's attorney as to the certificate of occupancy, and Judge Siegel asked it much better than I did. So is it your understanding that you won't get a certificate of occupancy until all of these details that you're talking about are fleshed out?
Yes.
And so there's going to be some sort of subsequent plan that addresses the off-site parking, the shuttles, the incentives, and the city approves that?
Yeah, well, and again,
and then you get a certificate of occupancy.
And again, where we are procedurally with the record on the EAW, I can tell you that the site plan has been approved by the city of St. Paul, and there's a lot of stuff in it. That's not part of this record because, of course, the site plan couldn't be approved until after environmental review was completed. But that is where those sorts of things happen. And yes, it is our understanding that we are not going to be able to move forward to use the arena unless and until we implement these mitigation measures as required by the findings of fact. I see my time is up. Do you have any?
Any questions from the panel? Okay. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Judge Bradfield, to your question, and it was also addressed by Judge Frisch to my colleague, your questions are essentially my answer to your previous question to me, which is where in the record is there any evidence that the mitigation identified in the EAW will have any impact on the parking deficit? And the answer is it's not in the record. And if you want to rely on future mitigation measures, it's not okay for the city and the university to come before you and say, look, we're going to do all this stuff in the future. We've got permits. We've got a site plan, all of this stuff. That's not good enough. If you want to rely on mitigation, the rule says you have to have specific measures in place, and it has to be certain, reasonably certain to be effective. Now, the city is entitled—
It doesn't say that the mitigation measures have to be in place. They just have to be identified.
That's what I mean, Your Honor. Yes, thank you. I mean, there's no arena yet, so you wouldn't have ride sharing in place, right? But you have to.
So my question is how much more detail needs to be in the transportation study incorporated into the EAW? What are we missing here?
There needs to be analysis as to how effective these measures will be. For example, ride share incentives. What are they, and how many people are going to use them? Right now, as the transportation study suggests, there's a 742 space deficit. How many of those vehicles will be eliminated with a rideshare? They don't even have an estimate. We have no idea.
Well, and Council, let's talk about the remote lot and sure. The shuttle service. That just seems to be a little bit more practical and in terms that we all can understand pretty clearly,
sure.
Especially 742 spaces twice a year, five times a year, something like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot fewer spaces most of the time. Right?
Right.
So are you just saying that the mitigation findings of the city had to include, what, a number of spaces in a lot? Or, I mean, because the plan to use remote lots to address a parking deficit seems pretty concrete.
Well, Your Honor, I think as you pointed out in your questions,
My questions are only questions, Council.
I understand
that. I'm asking
that,
you now.
But I think they're great questions, and I think they illuminate the issue, which is, you know, what lot? Are people willing to do that?
Well, I guess I don't understand. I need to press you on that. Why would the city have to find which particular lot, or why would UST have to offer up which particular lot? I mean, isn't it enough to simply say, well, so, you know, we have a moving number of spaces we're going to need. We have some options for remote lots. We know how to run shuttles. We've done it before.
Well, let me answer it more broadly. Okay. I think the standard is if the city comes to a conclusion, it must do so based on substantial evidence, okay? And that is substantial evidence in the record. Right now what we have are general mitigation measures like a shuttle lot. There's no evidence as to how effective that will be that the city can rely on to say, yes, that's going to solve this problem.
And how are you saying that the RGU is entitled to no deference in terms of their expertise in handling these kinds of things and historically? Because it seems like that would be something that would be familiar to the city.
Yeah, I am not saying that. The case law is very clear. They are entitled to deference. And what that means is they can't just conclude whatever they want. That's not the deference they're entitled to. They are entitled to look at the record and come to a reasoned decision. And if we don't like it, that's not enough. What we're saying is it's not that we just don't like their answer. It's that they didn't look at the proper analysis. They didn't consider serious problems like this massive parking shortage. And they didn't come to their conclusion.
But aren't there all these assumptions, though, that people, I mean, there's Lyft and Uber. There may not be in the city of Minneapolis going forward, but at least in St. Paul there still is. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's just not known.
That's the
and
point.
And so, well, no, but it seems like they've kind of taken, you know, a serious look at trying to estimate numbers, assuming that, you know, a couple people are in a car and they come. But that's mostly not how young people commute these days. So, you know, so what all are we, it just seems, and we're talking about parking places. We're not talking about, you know, PFAS chemicals being released. So Yeah, so there could be parking problems.
Two points, Your Honor, and my time is running out, but I'd like to make two points if I can. The first is, as you said, we don't know. The purpose of environmental review is to flesh out these issues before you build a $175 million sports arena. So we need to do the review now, and there has to be substantial evidence in the record to come to a reasoned conclusion. We don't have that. The second point, Your Honor, is the parking issue does have an environmental effect, and it relates to greenhouse gases. If you read the transportation study, and I forget the page number, it talks about how you're supposed to have a surplus of parking between 5 and 15%. Because if you don't have a surplus of parking, people drive around in circles looking for parking spaces, and it emits excess greenhouse gases. And that's another problem that I don't have time to discuss, that they're not calculating greenhouse gases from travel.
Electric cars. Okay. All right. Understood. Good argument.
No. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. And we do appreciate, first of all, thanks to everybody for everything that you've given to us, the briefs, the argument. It's all been very helpful to the court. And I want to assure you that we have taken a lot of time to understand it. We will continue to do that. The matter is now submitted to us for the court's decision. We will issue it within the statutory time frame. So with that, our oral argument calendar is concluded for today. We have two more matters on our non-oral calendar, so we will be in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.